My name is Eric Bowe, and welcome to the Primal Shopper Podcast. This podcast is for marketers, entrepreneurs, and academics interested in understanding why we shop the way we do. My goal is to focus on primal motivations driving our behaviors and how to apply these learnings to improve your marketing. Don't worry about taking notes. I'll include any links to the show notes, and so let's get on with the show. Well, it's been a while, folks, since my last podcast. I took a bit of a hiatus. It's summer in Michigan, or it was. So I enjoyed a lot of time with the family, really had a good time. Been thinking about future podcasts during that time, and guess what? We're going to come out blazing with a few of these. So the first one out of the gate was inspired by a presentation I saw over the summer by the marketing manager at Box Water. She did a great job of positioning box water, which is water that is in a box versus a plastic bottle, and the eco-conscious of it. When she did her presentation, she did a nice job of talking about where the critical mass of plastics are and just the negative ramifications of those, but also at the same time, the frustration that while they have more of an eco-friendly product, they're struggling with where are the desires? Who's going to buy this? So I thought I'd tackle that in the first episode back from my hiatus here. In this episode, I plan on getting into different levels of eco desires and how they affect a shopper. For example, what is the eco issue at hand and what are our current eco behaviors? Did a lot of research, looked at a lot of different sources on this just to get a handle on, well, what are we talking about? Next, why aren't people changing their eco behaviors? So what is holding us back from recycling more, from not buying plastics, and the like? And finally, what are the different mindsets of the eco shopper? And what are the core desires underneath them? So with that, let's get on with the episode. As a part of the presentation I saw, they really touched on the cataclysmic plastic overusage that's happening and how the world is just drowning in it. And in the introduction, the person pointed out an article from National Geographic, which I dove into as a part of the research for this. It was in June 2018 article, and they talk a lot. It's a long read, but it's a very good read, like many things in National Geographic. The title of the article is Planet or Plastics? We made plastics, we depend on it, now we're drowning in it. And there's some pretty stark stories and photography in it. They talk about how plastics came into vogue, what are the different types of plastics, our struggles with recycling it. And there's a lot of stories in between that really capture your attention. I would highly recommend reading this, but I'm going to give you just a couple snippets from it that really set up what I'm about to talk today. So first of all, the growth of plastics production has far outstripped the ability of waste management to keep up. That's why our oceans are under assault. And they talk about how a lot of this debris, this plastic debris, is just floating around the ocean. And they told a story in the article about the Malaysian airline Flight 370 crash in 2014. When rescuers were looking for it, they were using satellites to try to find the wreckage. And on several occasions, the satellite thought they saw airplane wreckage, but when they did a flyover, it turned out it was just vast amounts of plastics floating on the top of the ocean. I mean, this is pretty disturbing. And a couple stats just to pull out, just to get a little left brain here. A whopping 91% of plastics is not recycled. And secondly, while plastics get sold to a recycler, less than a fifth of all plastic gets recycled globally. In the U.S., it is less than 10%. Pretty stark numbers. And piles of plastics are growing, they're in the ocean and stuff like that. So this isn't an issue of do we have a problem. The question is, why aren't we changing our behavior? So let's touch a little bit on our U.S. eco behaviors. Pulled this out of an article, I'll put the link on there. 34% of Americans recycle roughly 254 million tons of trash. Of this, 50% is recyclable. The states leading recyclability are California, Maine, and Washington. The one that's lagging behind is Mississippi. Don't ask me why, I've never been there. But what about plastic bottles? I mean, that's really what the point of the presentation was. About 1 million bottles are purchased globally every minute. 1 million. That's amazing if you think about it. And the USA throws away 35 million bottles every year. Only 25% are recycled. This is true. It's disgusting. But again, why aren't we changing our habits? This reminds me of a metaphor in one of my favorite books, Switch, which is by the Heath brothers. It's the rider and the elephant. And I like this story because it sort of gets into how we tick as individuals. The rider is the logic in people, while the elephant is the emotions. And at times, the rider can get the elephant to go where they want to go. However, once the elephant wants to go their direction, there's nothing that rider can do. They're literally along for the ride. I think there's quite a bit in this category about the elephant and the rider. Logically, it makes sense we should be recycling. The question is, why aren't we? And more importantly, why do we keep buying plastics on a regular basis? So given this, I sort of dove into what are the different reasons for not recycling. And there's an article out there on CSR Wire. CSR stands for Corporate Social Responsibilities. And I highlighted three things that are keeping us from recycling more. One is convenient access. And this makes sense. Even if it's top of mind, you have a plastic bottle, you're out somewhere, and you're looking for a recycle bin, you can't find it, odds are you're going to throw it in the trash. Very few people are probably going to take it home with them and put it in their own recycle bin. Again, live in Michigan, convenient access is not at an optimum. Other states may have more convenient or may have this better thought out. Understanding how to recycle. What's interesting is I saw a news story recently where it talked about the plastic bottle. Now, I didn't catch all of it, but they talked about, well, the bottle itself is recyclable, but the cap's not, or the cap needs a different type of recycling. And it sort of makes you wonder, like, what the bleep am I doing putting stuff in a recycle bin every week when how much of that is really being recycled versus just being thrown into a pit? Finally, individual perception of personal impact. If you look at that National Geo article, those pictures are disgusting. They're impactful. But guess what? I didn't see them. You don't see them on a daily basis. If you were to go for a run in a park, I usually do that as much as I can. There's this park near me. And if I ran through it and I saw plastic all over the ground, that would have far more impact on me than somebody telling me there's plastic floating in an ocean. I'm not saying that doesn't bother me. I'm just saying that if you live with it daily, it's a constant reminder that you should do something about it versus an article you read once and never have seen it in person. Probably the number one thing most states have tried with plastic soda bottles in particular is a deposit. 10 states charge deposits on soda bottles. Does it work? Well, the only case study I could really find on this was from Massachusetts. And in Massachusetts, about 56% of the bottles were sold in 2017 were actually recycled, and it's received well by citizens. And that's much higher than the overall amount that I stated earlier. So it does work. The question you have to ask is still 44% are not recycled. While it's a step forward, it is better. Incentivization does work to a certain degree. It's still not the answer. In my trek to find out what works and what doesn't, I found some really arcane examples of different people trying. One was from a Vancouver market called East West Market in Vancouver, British Columbia. And what they decided to do, they want to wean people off of using plastic bags. So what they did is they took their plastic bags and they put really bizarre, shameful type of slogans on them just to hopefully embarrass people who are still using plastic bags. Things like Dr. Toe's Wart Ointment Wholesale or Into the Weird Adult Video Emporium. And finally, the Colon Care Co-op, where some of the things they put on the bags, and I'll include the link in the show notes, it's because they actually have visuals of these. The interesting thing, not only didn't work, it backfired, and people started collecting these things. So while you can try to shame people, and social is a part of this, the shaming doesn't work. Social acceptance does, though, because you drive down the road, like if you drive into your sub, or into your neighborhood, and you look at people's trash, do they have a red recycle bin? Conversely, if you're a person who doesn't, does that bother you? Does it make you feel? I can tell you in my household, I am constantly pulling plastic bottles out of the trash because while I am more eco-conscious, the rest of my family just seems to lob stuff in there and call it a day. So again, it all depends on how you're wired. But we're still not too really where is the elephant and the rider scenario here. One of my favorite topics I talk about on a regular basis is how people believe corporations should change or corporations should actually carry the values they do. And in a study by Nielsen, they asked shoppers how important was it that companies that they buy things from improve the environment. And in the U.S. or North America, about 70% of the people said, yes, the company should be improving the environment. However, compare this to a study done by the American Marketing Association in August of this year. They asked the question out there of, really, you want these companies to be more sustainable products? Do you want them to be more greener, more responsible with the ecology? But what are you doing about it? And in the study, they found several things. One, overall, 87% said they were concerned about the environment, but only 33% said they bought green products or were ready to do so. Very interesting. Again, thinking versus doing. I want somebody else to be responsible so I don't have to be. And this sort of foreshadows one of the conclusions I'm going to come to in the end. Also, in regards to brands, 65% of consumers said they want to buy from brands that advocate for sustainability. However, only 26% of consumers say they actually buy from those brands. Personally, I think this 26% is still high. This is something I have played with since I started doing Primal Shopper on different studies and asking them, when you shop, how many of the companies do you actually research in regards to sustainability, in regards to how they are affecting the ecology? Typically, while everybody says they want companies to do that, very few people said they actually researched brands prior to going into the store and shopping for them or prior to buying them online. This is not a surprise. So where does this leave us? Where do we find the desires for the eco-conscious? I don't think it's one thing. I think you had a spectrum of desires going on here. And I looked at it more and more. And what I like to do every so often is sort of look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, sort of to explain different levels of desire based on who we are and where we are in our life. For those who don't remember Maslow, because either A, you weren't introduced to it, or B, I don't know, college was decades ago, let me just walk through it really quickly. So Maslow's hierarchy of needs has five levels to it. Starts with the basic needs of psychological, food, water, warmth. The second level is safety needs, followed by belongingness and love needs, you know, relationships and friends, esteem needs, prestige and feeling accomplishment, and finally, self-actualization or self-fulfillment needs are at the top. Using this directionally, I sort of took a look at the eco-research that I dug up to find out what are the desires going on here. On the bottom, there's the eco-ambivalent. These people are either unaware, don't care, or have a more pressing issue. A great example of this is 30 miles north of where I live is Flint, Michigan. To this day, they are still using bottled water. They do not trust the tap water coming out. So when you don't have a valued water supply or a consistent water supply, what are you going to do? You're going to get bottled water or some type of water that you use on a regular basis. Are you recycling all of that? Maybe, but odds are probably not, because you're worried about the lowest form of Maslow's hierarchy here of just getting food, water, and getting through the day, let alone going up the pyramid to more of an eco-conscious. The second level above eco-ambivalent is eco-scared. This is knowledge based on the fear of news. You read the National Geo article, for example, and you feel compelled to do something. But are they scared enough to change? This is a little bit of the hyperbolic nature of the U.S. news. This is a little bit of what I'll call fear advertising, fear news. And what you want to do is scare people into acting a certain way. It does work for some, and I'll talk about really how that would work in a second, but it doesn't work for everybody. Above that, you have probably a lot of Americans would fall into the third category, which is eco-easy or eco-reimbursed. They will definitely recycle when it's convenient, and they will make the right choice if given one, or if they are actually incentivized through some type of tax or 10 cents a bottle, like on a lot of the states, or the 10 states I talked about. Again, if it's convenient, if they're given one, they will do it. Odds are, though, this third level will not go out of their way, but presented choices, they will make the right one. So what's above that? Well, the fourth level is eco badge. These people really look at the social norms of what's going on, and they want to be seen in a green light. So they are the ones that are going to notice the red recycle box in front of somebody's houses. They may be driving a Tesla. They are externally green because they want to be seen that way, but they may not be internally green. Again, this is more about your social profile than really something inherent in you. What's motivating these people is social personification more than it is a desire to fix the ecology, a desire to make things greener. Above Eco Badge is the last desire level, which is called Eco Me. These people preach eco, they live eco, they may even be an eco bully, and I'll come back to a second. They judge eco based on their standards. So I was doing some research for Tesla a while back, and it was on social media. And what's really interesting is people were talking about, they're talking about Tesla and their carbon footprint and really bragging about it. Well, you get these eco bullies coming in there, setting them straight. And I use that term loosely. I got air quotes going over here, that you're not really, you're still using a carbon footprint because you're still using electricity. You still are burning fossil fuels in many respects. That's an example of the eco me coming in and being that eco bully because while somebody feels they are, their standards say they're not. So how does this eco-conscious affect shopping? And I really looked at three different questions. Which level is willing to pay more? Which levels are willing to switch brands? Which levels are willing to spend more time? So let's go through each level and sort of talk about it a little bit. Starting at the bottom, the eco-ambivalent, the people who are unaware or don't care. Really, from a primal shopper perspective, there is no change in their typology. They are going to just act the way they always do, unless it is made for them, meaning that somebody actually removes the plastic bottles from them. They are going to continue to buy them, use them, and dispose of them in whatever way they see fit. Eco-scared. Eco-scared is interesting because they will do something if their behaviors are scripted. So for example, if somebody says, don't buy this, but buy this based on a product type. So go back to the boxed water. And saying, you know what, the economy or the ecology is going to crap. What you need to do is don't buy this, but right next to it is the boxed water, and there's plenty of them there. And by the way, one of the problems with boxed water, as the marketing manager said, it got lost on the shelf. To be honest, I have never seen it in a store until she brought it up, so I obviously agree with her perspective there. But again, back to the eco-scared. They're looking for the right thing to do because they are worried about whether it's greenhouse gases, whether they're worried about the overall ecology. But in the end, they have to be told what to do and they have to be scared into it. And this is where fear marketing or the hyperbolic nature of some of the news may work if you give them a script to follow. Eco-easy and eco-reimbursed. The interesting thing here is you have two different typologies. The eco-reimbursed wants their money back. They're going to be deal surgeons. They're going to bring their bottles back, not because they think it's the right thing to do, but because they want the 10 cents per bottle, 10 cents per can. The shopping minimalist is another one. They will do the right thing if it's extremely convenient for them. They are not going to go out of their way. They are going to dispose of the bottles as they see fit, as long as it's a simple thing to do and it minimizes their time to be green. So let's talk about Eco Badge, which is the next level up from Eco Easy. These people, again, the social norms, they're looking around them. They want to be seen as green. They're going to be comfort zoners. They're going to be fanatical finders. They're going to buy certain brands that they see as Eco Badges, brands that bring their persona to life as a green conscious person. With that said, they will spend more money. They are going to spend more money on brands because they want to be seen in a certain way. They may spend time in their journey to find the green brands to build their persona. And finally, they will switch brands if it's socially viewable and puts them in the best light. And last but not least is the eco me. The eco me is the person preaching eco, living eco, and like I said, maybe even eco bully. These people are solution shoppers. They spend their discretionary time reading. They spend time gaining knowledge and volunteering. This is very important to them. Where the eco badge is external, this is an internalization of really how they think and how they live their life. They will spend more money in addition to time. So it isn't just the time element, it's actually spending more. And they will or have switched brands based on their knowledge of how sustainable that brand's practices are or how green that brand is. So went through quite a bit here. I'm going to post this up on the show notes so you can read through it. And if you have any questions, let me know. But really interesting perspective of really dimensionalizing out there what are the different levels of desire and how people are reacting to what's going on with the overall plastics in the world today. I sort of want to wrap this podcast up asking a simple question. How can we really change behaviors? I talked about the five different levels, and really only one, the top one, is internally looking at the ecology as how they behave on a regular basis. The rest of us, including myself, are just sort of one of those other levels. If I had to put myself on a level, I would put myself on the eco-easy. I don't really believe in external badges. For those who met me know why. I mean, just start with how I dress. But anyway, so it's more of the eco-easy side is where I would put myself. Where would you put yourself? Do you believe in eco-badges? Are you eco-me? Are you eco-easy? Or are you eco-ambivalent? Again, really different levels here. Given the different levels, and only one of them is going to do the right thing on a regular basis to make this Earth a greener place to live, we need government intervention. Yep, the G word. Hate to say it. What's interesting is Canada earlier this year announced it's going to ban single-use plastics by 2021. They're going to remove them altogether. In the U.S., two cities actually are doing the same thing, San Francisco and Concord, which is a village in Massachusetts. By removing that option, obviously it's going to have an impact if I have to rethink my purchase choices because water or soda, for all that matters, will not be available in that manner. So it'd be very interesting. I know the water is easy to do in the plastics, but if you have carbonation, what's going to happen there, which I think is going to be a really interesting evolution in consumer behavior. Also, companies are trying to address this. PepsiCo just announced something called a circular economy. Next year, 2020, they expect to eliminate more than 8,000 metric tons of virgin plastics and roughly 11,000 metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions. Pepsi's larger goal of making 100% of its package recyclable, compostable, or biodegradable, and use 25% recycled content in all plastics packaged by 2025. So they are taking the step, and they may be the avant-garde that others will follow. I think by doing both of these, you're going to get to where we need to be to really remove a lot of the disturbing visuals, the disturbing problems that was highlighted at the beginning of this podcast in the National Geographic article. So that's about it for the Eco Shopper. If you have any questions, like I said, give me a shout out. Be very interested to take those five levels and work with somebody to figure out what percents are each one and dive into them a little more, because I think while I talked about the government's removing plastics or PepsiCo circular economy, it's interesting to see that maybe there are other things that could happen by different levels there and based on the motivations they have. So that wraps up this episode. First of all, as always, thanks for listening. If you enjoy this podcast, I encourage you to subscribe to future podcasts on primalshopper.com or subscribe on your favorite podcast service like iTunes, Anchor, or Google. Also, if you are interested in how Primal Shopper can increase the effectiveness of your marketing, feel free to contact me on LinkedIn. I would be happy to answer any questions you may have. Finally, if you haven't yet, the book is selling. Have you picked up your copy of Primal Shopper yet? If not, check out Amazon or Borders. It's on there. I would love it if you picked up a copy of it, and I would appreciate your support. Well, that's it for now. Until next time, this is Eric Bowe on the Primal Shopper Podcast. Later, folks.